The climax of Parshat Vayera is towards the very end of the Parsha, and we have the story of Akedas Yitzchak. The story of the Akedah is well known to us, and sometimes I'm afraid we're so jaded by the story, we know it so well, that every time we read it again, it doesn't make the impression that it should make. But I want to focus on one point, to a certain extent an unusual medrash, that appears in the Medrash Rabbah on this Parsha. The Torah tells us that Avram Avinu is commanded by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to travel with Yitzchak and to make him into an Ola in the land of Moriah. In Pasuk Dalet in Perek Chof Bet, the Torah tells us, Vayom HaShlishi Vayisa Avraham Et Einav Vayaret HaMakom Erechok. It was on the third day that Avram Avinu raises his eyes and he sees the place, he sees the mountaintop from a distance. How does he know that that's the place? Rashi says, Ra anan kashor lahar. He sees that there's a special kind of cloud that's hovering over the mountain. And this took place on the third day. Comes along the Medrash Rabbah, and evidently did some sort of Google search as to where we see that the third day has a certain degree of prominence. And the Medrash says, Bayom HaShlishi Vayisa Avram Et Einav. It says, Bayom HaShlishi Shel Shvatim. K'tiv Bayom Aleim Yosef Bayom HaShlishi. Yosef, when the brothers come to Yosef, they don't know who this Tzafnas Paneach character is. Yosef accused them of being miraglim. He throws them all into jail. And on the third day, he takes almost all of them out of jail. He keeps behind Shimon and he sends the rest back home. That was on the third day. And the Medrash continues, Bayom HaShlishi Shel Miraglim, Shenema V'Nachbetem Shem Shloshet Yamim. The miraglim, the beginning of Sefer Yeshua, when they come into Yericho and Rachav saves them, and she lets them out the window and she tells them you should go hide for 3 days. Bayom HaShlishi Shel Matan Torah, Shenema Vahi Bayom HaShlishi. And Parshas Yisrael, Bnei Yisrael are getting ready, and on the third day, they get the Torah. Bayom HaShlishi Shel Yonah, Yonah Hanavi, he's in the mouth of the large dog. He's there for 3 days and 3 nights. Bayom HaShlishi Shel Olei Gola, those who are returning from the Gola, from the exile with Ezra, Dichtiv, Aneshav Sham, Yamim Shlosha, on their way, they traveled and they stayed there for 3 days. Bayom HaShlishi Shel Tchias HaMesim, on the third day, when it's referring to Tchias HaMesim, Dichtiv, Yechayenu Miyomayim, Bayom HaShlishi Yechaymenu. And finally, Bayom HaShlishi Shel Esther. Bayi Bayom HaShlishi Esther fasts, and on the third day of the fasting, Vatubesh the Malchus, and she appears before Achashverosh. There are seven, if I counted correctly, seven different occasions that the Medrash's Google search showed up that it talks about 3 days. Very nice. What in the world does this have to do with Bayom HaShlishi? Obviously, the Medrash is not just interested in some coincidence that 3 days was important. It seems to be a very important message that the Medrash wants to convey. And Rabbi Reuven Katz, who Zatzal was the Rav Rashi of Petach Tikva, in the Sefer Dudar Reuven, makes the following observation. At the beginning of the Akedah, Torah tells, Hashem tells Avram Avinu, Vayomer kach na et bincha et yichitcha asher ahavta et Yitzchak v'lech lecha le'eretz ha-moriah v'aleo sham li'olah l'achad harim asher amar elecha. What does the word na mean? Kach na. Says Rashi, Ein na el loshon bakasha. Was a request. I beg of you, says the Ribbono Shel Olam. Amad li bazar nisayon, please. Please. You should be successful. then you should not only survive, but be successful in this nisayon, in this final test. So they shouldn't say that the early ones don't really count. Now, obviously, Hashem doesn't exactly tell Avraham that it's a test. But what's he asking? This one, please, make sure that the others, you shouldn't dismiss. This is going to make the difference. Avraham Avinu was tested, according to Chazal, 10 times. But this is the only test where the Torah tells us Hashem nisat Avraham, Elokim nisat Avraham. This was the ultimate test. And it seems that this test was a culmination that's going to make a difference in all the other tests that Avraham underwent. To take your son, your beloved son, the one who is going to carry on your legacy of believing in one God, doing chesed, something that you've worked for your whole life, to go and to take him and to use him as a sacrifice, to kill him in cold blood. And all because this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said. It makes no sense. Because I'll tell us that Avraham Avinu said, but you promised me, he was thinking, and only afterwards did he ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But you told me, Ki b'Yitzchak yikar l'chazara. Shmuel is not following in my ways. No one else will take over. My whole life's work is going to go down the drain. And I, who epitomize chesed, I'm going to have to go and to murder somebody. This is the hardest of things to do. And Avraham Avinu does it and shows that he has tremendous mesiras nefesh for the Ribbono Shel Olam. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds and says, Ato yadati ki yirei Elokim ato. That you were willing to give up everything. Everything in this world and almost everything in the next world. In your ruchnius, in your gashmius, because I asked you to. The ultimate mesiras nefesh. And when that happened, explains to Dudai Reuven, that Mesiras Nefesh now became embedded in the descendants, in the genetic code of Avram's descendants. If we have, as Jews, have any sense of Mesiras Nefesh, it was because of the Mesiras Nefesh of Avram Avinu, which was ultimately finalized in that last Nisayon of the Akedah that became part of our genetic code. And if you take a look at the examples that the Medrash brings, you see the Mesiras Nefesh that's necessary in all occasions. Yosef is the first example. Take a look at Yosef. He's living in Beis Potiphar. His brother sold him as a slave. He's given up for dead. His father doesn't know what happened to him. He has no future. What future does Yosef have? He's cut off from everything. He's a slave and he'll always remain a slave. And he gets propositioned by his master's wife. Why not? Why not? What does he have to lose? His previous life? What previous life? It's gone, it's finished, it's history. And Chazal, according to one day, says that that's what he was thinking. He comes into the house and he's going to give it all up. And at the last second, he runs out. He leaves behind his coat, his jacket, as evidence that Potiphar's wife will use to say that he tried to assault her. And why? Because he saw this image of his father. He decided, I just can't give it all up. Where did he get that Mesiras Nefesh from? He got it from Avraham Avinu. It was in his genetic code. He had to make use of it
certainly not guaranteed, but that he was able at the last second to muster the courage to remain true to those values, it's all because of Avraham. The Meraglim, leaving the Midbar, leaving an existence that was totally supernatural, and entering into Eretz Yisrael and capturing Eretz Yisrael in a more natural way and living a more natural life was not easy. And there were those who didn't want to do it. But after 40 years in the Midbar, Bnei Yisrael enter into Eretz Yisrael and they're willing to do what's necessary. And that Mesiras Nefesh comes. That Bayom HaShlishi comes because of the Yom HaShlishi of Avraham. Matan Torah is Bayom HaShlishi. It's not easy to live a life of Torah. It's great. It's wonderful. But it's not easy. And at times it requires Mesiras Nefesh. And if we have it, it's only because of Avraham. Yonah. Yonah decides to run away from Hashem. He spends 3 days and three nights in that large fish. And Yonah has to come to the conclusion that I was wrong and I have to do what Hashem wants. And it is not easy at all to say I was wrong. It required Yonah to take a whole different perspective. After all, he did what he did for the sake of Bnei Yisrael. To come along and say, despite that I think that I was convinced beyond a shadow of a doubt that I was right, the Kadosh Baruch Hu was thinking differently. And I'll give it all up because that's what I need to do. The Ole Hagola in the time of Ezra. Coming in Aliyah is not easy. It's wonderful. I have no regrets at all. But if you think it's easy, you're mistaken. It requires Mesiras Nefesh. And if any of us who came in Aliyah, Baruch Hashem, many, most of us, have made successful Aliyah, we owe it to Avraham. That ability to be Moser Nefesh for something that we know ultimately is good, it's because of Avraham. Tchias HaMeisim, the Geula, it's through Avraham. And Esther. Esther had to sacrifice her whole personal life, because I'll tell us that until now she would be allowed to stay with Mordechai. After this, which she willingly goes to Achashverosh, she'd be also to Mordechai. She sacrifices her whole personal life for the sake of Am Yisrael. And that's Mesiras Nefesh. And all these examples, Bayom HaShlishi in 3 days, and another Bayom HaShlishi, is because Avraham Avinu passed that final test. And when he did that, we inherited his ability to be Moser Nefesh. It's still not easy, and it's still not automatic. But we're capable of doing it. Speer Shabbos was known in many places, the Shabbos of the Shabbos Project. It was an amazing idea that started, I think, 3 years ago. If I'm correct, by Rabbi Goldstein, the chief rabbi of South Africa. People claim he's the ultimate optimist. He decided that Jews all over the world should keep at least one Shabbos. At least one Shabbos a year. And he did amazing things. It started off the first year in South Africa, and people were just amazed what he was able to get to be, what people were willing to do. And it spread. Probably many of you know about it. So the Peer Shabbos was again the Shabbos Project. So in Ramat Beit Shemesh, where I lived, somebody was organizing things, and he asked people if they wanted to host people for a meal. So we had three students My house Friday night. And one of them was a madricha. She's from. The other two on their way. I spoke to one in particular, young woman. I think she's 22, graduated college. Some interesting life stories. And at the beginning, I couldn't quite tell where she was up to, because she was telling us how she came from non-from background. She went to Rutgers, and in Rutgers, she met a mentor who started getting her on the path to Judaism. But originally, she wasn't going to go to Rutgers. She was going to go to Northwestern. And then she said something like, "But Hashem has his ways." So I thought maybe by now she's frum, but then later on in the conversations, she's on the derech, but she's not there yet. And she's studying in Neve, and I don't know where she's going to be. On the one hand, I know it's not easy. As somebody who did grow up being Shomer Kashrus and Shomer Shabbos, to make that change is very difficult. I don't know what she's going to do, but I do know what she's capable of doing. She's capable of making that leap. And she's capable of doing that because she, like the rest of us, is a descendant from Avraham Avinu. And if he had that Mesiras Nefesh, then she has the ability to tap into it. I'm sure it's not easy, but it's doable. I heard in this context, I heard a story quite a number of years ago about a young man who came from a more or less religious home, but his level of religiosity was not the highest, not the strongest. He was very much into music. Not Avram Fried, not Shweki, but the other type of music. And he played in a band. But he was playing in one of these like low-level nightclubs. And one day a scout for a big band came in and listened to him play. And afterwards he went over to him and he said, "I like the way you play. You're good. I want to offer you a contract." And the kid is all excited. This is his big break. And the guy tells him how much he's going to offer and this and that. And he tells him, "Your first gig is going to be this Friday night." And this guy, as I said, his level of religiosity was not so great. But he never played on Shabbos. But this was the break he was waiting for. And he doesn't know what to do. So there's a certain rabbi that used to go, sort of mentor, that used to go talk his issues over with. And he went to him, and he told him the whole problem, and the rabbi's talking to him, and they're back and forth. He says to him, "Listen, go home, take a piece of paper out, draw a line down the center, make two columns. On one side, I want you to write down all the reasons why you should take the job, why you should sign the contract. And on the other side, I want you to write down all the reasons why you shouldn't take the job. And after you do that, come back to me and we'll talk." Guy goes home, takes out a piece of paper, doesn't sleep very much, and does as he's told. The next day he comes back to the rabbi, he puts the paper down on the desk. There's a line down the middle, and one column is very, very long, and one column is extremely short. The rabbi takes a closer look, and the column that has reason after reason after reason is the column that says why he should take the job. And then he looks at the other column. He says, reasons why I shouldn't take the job. And the guy wrote down one word. Nitzchiyut. Eternity. He says, all the reasons why I should take the job made perfect sense. In the short run. But for eternity, no. Turns down the job, packs his bag, 2 weeks later goes off to Eretz Yisrael to go study in Eshet Torah. I remember hearing the story, I said, where did the guy get the courage to do that? It's what he wanted is, you know, for so many years now, to get that big break. If he turns down this job, he's never going to get another. They're all going to be like that. It's because he had a grandfather named Avram. And he was able to muster the courage to tap into that Mesiras Nefesh. To make that decision. One last story. On Thursday, you were not to you, I went to a Levaya. Professor Yaffa Elyach, a name that many of you probably don't know, passed away in the United States. The Levaya was here in Eretz Yisrael on Thursday. How do I know Professor Elyach? Her husband, Yibadel L'chaim Aruchim, Rabbi Elyach was principal of the Yeshiva Flatbush for many years, and I taught there quite a number of years, and he was the principal at the time. She was his wife. Some of you may know the name of Professor Smadar Rosenzweig. If you don't know yet, if you go to Stern College, you probably will know the name. She's a brilliant teacher. She's a daughter of Professor Elyach. But the way I really got to know her was through this book, Hasidic Tales of the Holocaust. It's a book that was published in 1982, and I highly recommend it. We used to have a copy here in the Beit Midrash that I think disappeared with copies of some other Svarim that disappear over the years. Hopefully you all put to good use. But it's an amazing book. And the title tells it all. It's stories, Hasidic stories from the Shoah. Each story is amazing. I think she writes that there are 89 stories here. It's excellent reading for Tisha B'Av. It's an excellent reading anytime. Just want to read to you the first story. It's the first story she writes in the book. It was a dark, cold night in the Janiskal Road camp. It was a work camp, not quite an extermination camp, but not always much better. Suddenly, a stentorian shout pierced the air, "You are all to evacuate the barracks immediately and report to the vacant lot. Anyone remaining inside will be shot on the spot." Pandemonium broke out in the barracks. People pushed their way to the doors while screaming the names of friends and relatives. In a panic-stricken stampede, the prisoners ran in the direction of the big open field. Exhausted, trying to catch their breath, they reached the field. In the middle were two huge pits. Suddenly, with their last drop of energy, the inmates realized where they were rushing on that cursed dark night in Janowska. Once more, the cold, healthy voice roared in the night, "Each of you dogs who values his miserable life and wants to cling to it must jump over one of the pits and land on the other side. Those who miss will get what they rightly deserve." Ratatatatatata. Imitating the sound of a machine gun, the voice trailed off into the night, followed by a wild, coarse laughter. It was clear to the inmates that they would all end up in the pits. Even at the best of times, it would have been impossible to jump over them. All the more so on that cold, dark night
in Janowska. The prisoners standing at the edge of the pits were skeletons, feverish from disease and starvation, exhausted from slave labor and sleepless nights. Though the challenge that had been given them was a matter of life and death, they knew that for the SS and the Ukrainian guards, it was merely another devilish game. Among the thousands of Jews on that field in Janowska was the Bluzhever Rebbe, Rabbi Yisrael Spira. Rabbi Yisrael Spira survived the war. He lived to the age of 99. He lived in Brooklyn. And many of the stories here from the Bluzhever Rebbe. The Bluzhever Rebbe was standing with a friend, a free thinker from a large Polish town whom the rabbi had met in the camp. Free thinker means the person wasn't religious. A deep friction had developed between the two. Spira, the Bluzhever Rebbe's name was Rabbi Yisrael Spira. So this guy turns to him, Spira! All our efforts to jump over the pits are in vain. We only entertain the Germans and their collaborators. Let's sit down in the pits and wait for the bullets to end our wretched existence, said the friend to the rabbi. My friend, said the rabbi, as they were walking in the direction of the pits, man must obey the will of God. If it was decreed from heaven that pits to be dug, and we be commanded to jump, pits will be dug, and jump we must. And if, God forbid, we fail and fall into the pits, we will reach the world of truth a second later, after our attempt. So, my friend, we must jump. The rabbi and his friend were nearing the edge of the pits. The pits were rapidly filling up with bodies. The rabbi glanced down at his feet, the swollen feet of a 53-year-old Jew ridden with starvation and disease. He looked at his young friend, the skeleton with burning eyes. As they reached the pit, the rabbi closed his eyes and commanded in a powerful whisper, "We are jumping!" When they opened their eyes, they found themselves standing on the other side of the pit. "Spira, we are here, we are here, we are alive!" the friend repeated over and over again. While warm tears streamed from his eyes, "Spira, for your sake I am alive, indeed there must be a God in heaven. Tell me, Rebbe, how did you do it?" "I was holding on to my ancestral merit. I was holding on to the coattails of my father and my grandfather and my great-grandfather of blessed memory," said the rabbi. And his eyes searched the black skies above. "Tell me, my friend, how did you reach the other side of the pit?" "I was holding on to you," replied the rabbi's friend. Life has many challenges. Hopefully never anything as terrible as this. But we have challenges in life. But we have that ability to surmount those challenges, to jump beyond them, not to fall and get stuck in it. And we have that ability because we all can hold on to the coattails of fathers and grandfathers, great-grandfathers and great-grandmothers of Avram, Yitzhak, Yaakov and Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Leah. Avram embedded within us that ability to reach deep inside, and to tap into something so powerful that can overcome so many difficulties. And that is just but one legacy by Kedas Yitzchak.